Te tobra shewe che to, tambi chewe rumbo che se nyembe, kono shangyu je semje tse sembe goni sembe rikyong.
Let us cultivate the altruistic motivation seeking complete enlightenment for the sake of liberating infinite kind mother sentient beings. With that kind of altruistic or bodhicitta motivation, that we should all participate in this teaching.
Ani sanji koma toba shevala digwa pang, digwa duguwe. Bipung gedushi yagi che to, ani ta tambi che nima che ta, kore de nyingi yu sambashi.
In other words, what I just, reminded you, or all of ourselves as a matter of fact, that is to cultivate the altruistic motivation or bodhicitta motivation. What that involves is, the ultimate spiritual goal that we are seeking, which is complete enlightenment or Buddhahood, for the sake of both self and others. And in order to realize that goal, we must do two things. We must do purification practice. We have to purify ourselves of mental obscurations and negativities. We need to practice virtue, or that which is positive. And through these practices, we would like to be able to accomplish complete enlightenment soon. And so as a part of that whole thing, we should also think that we are participating in this teaching so that we learn about, the practices of purification and cultivation, which would lead us to our ultimate spiritual goal.
Tā nyōmu pī rīt samal pāṅgāli, tā tīnī pāṅyā tāṅ, tā tīp āyua nā sāṅ tā, tīnī sāṅ guyārū, tī tāpa guyā mārīs. Ani pāṅjī rīt samal wā pāṅjī yabatī sāñjī kāmdī kā nā yu rīs.
So what I've just mentioned is that we need to do two types of practice to be able to become completely enlightened being called Buddha. We need to do purification practice and we need to do cultivation practice. And, so purification involves purifying ourselves of all defilements or delusions and negativities. And now one may think that, oh my gosh, how could I do that? There are, too many delusions and negativities to be purified. Maybe that's an impossible thing to do. But the thing to remember is we really don't need to have that kind of a doubt or, you know, mindset, because our historical teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha, our original guru, if you will, or Lama, have clearly said that delusions, however, you know, many they are, or negativities for that matter, they are purifiable. They can be purified. And so theoretically speaking, it is very possible to purify ourselves of all delusions and negativities. And here is, you know, one of the, you know, theoretical principles why that is possible, if you will. As Geshe-la quoted the lines from memory, which basically state that delusions which are inside our mind, they are temporarily there. They are adventitious delusions. They reside in our mind. That means, you know, they are quite closely, how you say, in the proximity of our mind, or they are really, I mean, related with our mind, but they have not contaminated the very nature of our mind. In other words, our mind and delusions are not one and the same thing. You know, they are together, you know, very, you know, closely together, if you will, but they are still very distinct and separate. So because delusions are in our mind just temporarily, it's not their permanent address, if you will. So therefore, theoretically, that's the principle, that, you know, based upon which we can say that delusions can be purified. So to use an example to illustrate this point of, you know, how delusions and our mind are, you know, closely together, but nonetheless they are distinct and separate, and therefore they can be separated from one another. I would like to give you this example of, you know, dirty laundry. Well, when we have dirty laundry, we need to do our laundry, wash it. So what we recognize is that our clothes have become dirty, so they need to be cleaned. But the clothes and dirt are not inseparably, you know, become one, you know. But they're just, you know, they're together. Yes, they are, you know, very closely linked together, but they are different, and therefore we can do laundry and we get back clean clothes. So dirt of our clothes are, you know, can be purified in the sense that delusions in our mind are like the dirt on our clothes, the laundry. And the laundry itself could be thought of as our mind. So when we put the dirty laundry in and do our laundry, what we get back is clean laundry, you know. In the same way, when we do a purification practice, we purify the dirt-like delusions, but the laundry-like mind stays clean. In the Buddhist literature, it is clearly, you know, argued and presented and defended that the true nature of our mind is clear light. When we say our mind, we basically mean, you know, all sentient beings, not just us humans. clear light is, if you will, the true nature of our minds. In other words, that our mind in its true nature is pure and pristine. It just temporarily is contaminated by delusions and negativities. So when we do purification practice, you know, what happens is that as we purify more and more of the negativities and delusions in our mind, then the clear light nature of our mind, it started to shine more and more. That's what is happening.
So that Sanjay Kompa Topsi Jani, and that so many but you also draw on it, so you also draw on it, and that similar you be tell.
So now to put this in in a broader context and connect it with the ultimate spiritual goal that we are seeking, which is Buddhahood, complete enlightenment. What is complete enlightenment, if you ask? Complete enlightenment is a state of mind where it is completely free of, it's pure of all mental obscurations, delusions, their imprints and negativities. So our mind is completely pure and pristine, and we have also fulfilled the two types of accumulation of merit called punya in Sanskrit, an accumulation of wisdom or insight called jnana. So when we have fulfilled, or when we have gained consummation in these two types of accumulation of merit and wisdom, and we have completely purified our mind of all delusions and negativities, that state of mind is called enlightened mind. To put it in another way, if you ask what is the main responsibility of a spiritual practitioner, you know, we as spiritual practitioners, what should be the main practice we should be doing? Okay, if you ask, well, here it is. You know, we need to purify our mind of the two types of mental obscuration. One is called delusions or obscuration to nirvana, personal liberation, and obscuration to omniscient wisdom. So we need to do purification practice, purify our mind of those two types of mental obscuration, and we need to complete the practice of cultivation, which involves fulfilling the two types of accumulation of merit and accumulation of wisdom. So once we have completed those two practices, purification and cultivation, accumulation, then we are done with our work, and that's where we become Buddha.
Oh, nice. That Sanjay Kompa Topsi Jani, Pa Tha Rungpa Kyun Jo Goya Ma, Zubu Tanda Ngaran Tsu Yeben Dekha Rangji, Ni Tha La, Sanjay Kompa Topsi Jeju Yen Dekha Rangji.
So what I'm trying to say here is that when we work for complete enlightenment or Buddhahood, we should not think in some way that, oh, complete enlightenment is a great distance away, like billions of, miles away, and we need to make that like a travel, of billions, miles, and then we get there. It is not a geographical location. It's not a territory, that we can travel to. It is more of a state of mind. We can be where we are in now, And so through our practice and development, you know, we get to our spiritual destination, which is complete enlightenment.
Mi lutin lang yor wa seta mi lutin de lang ne mi lutin de pam ata ma zo zin zin ne gi duta pe ma hi kon la zo po de ge yom de nang sem de ge ne nang sem de do rang le ji pang pe zo po ni mo de de wa tan ma bi ji ta li to zo ji ren de
so we you know, fortunate in that we have this precious human life or fully endowed human form. So we have basically human mind and human body. Well, there's not much we can do to change our human form. I think in the footnote, what Keshe Prabhupada meaning is we cannot change this human form into the form of some other kind of animal or a being.
In this lifetime.
So. In this lifetime. But our really main concern and what we should be doing and we could do is changing our mind. You know, we need to transform our mind. So without need to do much of a change or do anything to our body, we try to affect tremendous change in our mind so that being a human being in a human body, we can have great spiritual, spiritual advancement.
So the that can do the anita, alright. That Sanji you could talk to me top Shabalani, Tony Sab. That Tony Sabal at the Korg was talking you guys, Sanji just sent that Tony to be here, his Simba Kita, Maran Gava Karidubian, Gava Karidubian, Sanji just sent down Tony to be here, Niji Simba Ki.
So we need to accumulate merit and wisdom. Technically speaking, we need to accumulate two types of accumulation, accumulation of merit and accumulation of wisdom. And how do we do that? And what is essential for doing that, if you ask, is that whatever positive action we do or whatever virtue we create and accumulate, we need to do it grounded in or by way of cultivating the altruistic mind of enlightenment or bodhicitta and cultivating the wisdom realizing emptiness as it is. So bodhicitta and the wisdom realizing emptiness as it is are essential for us to fulfill the two types of accumulation, accumulation of merit and accumulation of wisdom. We need to kind of feel, think very broadly and sort of in a sense of spacious sense in that, and how do we create and accumulate virtue if we want to do something positive? Well, as I often speak about this thing, that each of us has three things, body, speech and mind. And by using these three things we have, we call the three doors. So by way of our physical, verbal and mental actions, we create and accumulate positive actions. So physically we can do prostrations to holy beings, we can use our body to benefit and help others, and so these are some of the examples how physically we can do practice or we can accumulate virtue.
Rang any lute, pecure tane, a tag gayish holler, Now again, the pember paint of it. Never, never remind me pember of it. Who knows?
In other words, what I'm trying to say is that we use our body, you know, to do something that is beneficial and virtue. You know, we should not use our body in any negative way, in the sense like if somebody is doing something negative and he or she or they need our help, physical help to do it, we should not participate in that action or activity because that is not positive, you know. So do not use our body to harm others, but rather use our body to help and benefit others. That's what I'm talking about.
Ani ngāk guṇi karisa na ani hindu sepata, ani sāngji da kyuta gindu samdra siyata. Kaka nāngi da sūsiyo ni pki sāngji ji ani ndo lopa ta. Ta tindi ki ani ngāk guṇi ta gheva kani na duju ngā chāngpa nabu tenzu ngā chāngpa tindi kūnu yāng yāng tāpi guṇi sīgu guṇi arisa.
And we could also use our speech to do positive things. So some of the examples that I will give is that we recite prayers, or we can recite prayers to take refuge in Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. We can read sutras. We can recite mantras. Of course, all of these things must be done with positive motivation. If the motivation is gone wrong or not proper, then it would be a different case. But with proper motivation, if we recite prayers, we do chanting, or we go for refuge in Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha verbally, and read sutras and so forth, that's how we engage our speech in positive actions.
Ta yiji goni hago ta gomji tsandi yiji gon san tango te yiji gon teba sheba ta teba la tango yi teba yiji teba ngundi yi teba sheba ta tini yuari tse tsandu yiji gon teba sheba ta ni yiji gon ta gewe le du tsa tsoo ta yiji gon dugu ya kesa.
And of course, mind is the forerunner of all our actions. And when we talk about doing something positive or even doing practice, we are basically talking about engaging in our mind in positive actions. Of course, we can cultivate faith, Dharma teachers. But the faith is of different kinds. We can talk about clear faith, we can talk about aspiring faith, we can talk about faith as conviction and so forth. Or when we talk about doing meditation, that which really does meditation or should be doing meditation is our mind. So we engage our mind in meditation. And
positively, create actions through mind.
Of course, there are like zillions of other, practices or actions that we could do which accord with our practice, and simple things like, making the offering of lights or what we call butter lamps, or like the offering incense. Well, these things seem to be very simple practices, but by cultivating proper motivation, these simple actions could contribute to the accumulation of merit.
Rank a pig, you probably in a tatty, and it's singing time you don't sanjay come up to be cheered the bugging, isn't this? And the baby is only almost down being a sanjay, same state, same type, that child.
Let me just specify what I mean by, cultivating proper motivation to do such actions. Let's say by cultivating the altruistic mind of enlightenment as our motivation, basically we are seeking complete enlightened state for the benefit of all other sentient beings. And with that kind of a motivation and a vision, we have a vision, we make offering of an incense, right, incense stick. The practice we do seems to be simple, but because of that vision and altruistic motivation, our action or the practice, it helps us to accumulate merit that that leads to complete enlightened state.
That deal,
So by cultivating the altruistic mind of enlightenment, or we call bodhicitta motivation, we make a simple offering of incense to Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. That simple act or practice or action of ours is could help us to accumulate merit, leading us to complete enlightened state. Now, additionally, now if we think of what we call the ultimate nature of all the things involved in this simple practice, that is to say that the objects to whom we make the offering, Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, and what is being offered to them, in this case is incense, who is making the offering, we as practitioners, all these what we call factors involved in this practice are empty of inherent existence, meaning that nothing involved in this exists in and of itself. Nothing is inherently existent. Everything is labeled by terms and concepts. So everything is mere labels, basically, you know, and we reflect on that nature, that there is no such thing as inherently existent here. Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, to whom I make offerings, they are empty of inherent existence. Offering that I'm making, incense, is empty of inherent existence. I, as practitioner, who makes offering, is empty of inherent existence. If we reflect on that, then that part of our practice helps us to accumulate what we call wisdom. So that's how, you know, by doing one practice, we can bring together the accumulation of merit and wisdom. So what I've just explained, how to incorporate accumulation of merit and wisdom into every practice or simple action we perform with regard to incense offering, now that is applicable to every other action or practice we do. So don't consider like, oh, well, that's what I can do when I do the offering practice, but maybe not when I am giving food to a hungry person or a hungry animal. Okay, we may just give a mouthful of food either to a hungry man or hungry animal or a bird, whatever the case may be. If we do that with altruistic motivation and reflecting on the emptiness of inherent existent nature of things, basically every little action or a practice that we do, or a big practice we do for that matter, our practice is characterized by accumulations of merit and wisdom. So that's so important. We could do it with any action and practice that we do, you know, simple or, you know, profound. Doesn't matter.
So
you know, theoretically and strictly speaking, how every simple or, you know, complex act or practice, you know, can be characterized by accumulation of merit and wisdom, is like if we really have bodhicitta, you know, in our mind, if we have really got insight or realization of emptiness as it is, then in those cases or situations, if everything we do, you know, the positive, it is characterized by bodhicitta and wisdom, and therefore our actions help us to accumulate and fulfill accumulation of merit and wisdom. There's no doubt about it. But in our cases, I'm assuming that most of us don't have real bodhicitta in our mind. We don't have real realization of emptiness now, but nonetheless, we would like to have them and cultivate them. So in that process, what I just explained
to you... Somebody else had role.
Something relevant to us in that, you know, we are not pretending that we have bodhicitta or we have the wisdom realizing emptiness, and therefore every action we do is being characterized by them. But we are being honest, and we are trying to cultivate bodhicitta and wisdom realizing emptiness. So what we have is what we call contrived form of bodhicitta and wisdom realizing emptiness. And this is as good as we get now. And as we pursue our practice in this mode, then we are able to develop bodhicitta and wisdom realizing emptiness.
Ani rangju sen rumbo rangju seva seva la, hiji chumbo rangju seva hun dokuris.
So in other words, you know, even this simple practice that I'm just about to explain, just underneath this, what we find is a greater practice, which is we have to cultivate bodhicitta in our mind. In order to cultivate bodhicitta or the altruism, what we do need, before that, is we need to cultivate great compassion. So in order to cultivate great compassion, then we have to really think positively so that we don't think anything or do anything that's harmful to sentient beings, but rather we are thinking positively that is helpful and beneficial to sentient beings. Because that is key to compassion, great compassion. We need to cultivate the sense of responsibility, we call the willpower, that I wish sentient beings to be free from suffering its causes, and I would like to take that responsibility to help them to do that in whatever way I can. So cultivating that sense of responsibility, the willpower, is also a key factor in developing
bodhicitta.
So when we develop that sense of responsibility that I would like to help sentient beings to be free from suffering and its causes, of course, then what really follows from that mindset is that I cannot do anything to harm sentient beings, but what I should be doing is do anything that is helpful and beneficial to sentient beings.
So
as we cultivate that sense of responsibility, and also we, you know, think of not harming sentient beings, but helping them in whatever we can, but in our mindset and also in terms of our practice, we must not discriminate among sentient beings. In other words, we should not think somewhere along the line that, you know what, these are the sentient beings, the people I would really like to help, but these are the people, I don't care, I harm them or not, you know, they're kind of a different, you know, brand of some kind. So we cannot in some way, again, cultivate that kind of a discrimination, in our mind, because that doesn't work with great compassion.
Oh. Kamsum kamsum ge shegu mali be tuen yas. Dan lama shwa nro kamsum shegu mali tuju je hie kin tsandros. Tuba tsa mazi e hie wat tsandro wat. Ata ni shwa ta hie tsandro. De de shus de kwash de ne de de ta ta. Ta ga ni dung de shwa ta. Ne so ge chans. A ta no so ge ba in shun ne yas. Mun shu ne le se. De le ane yeng ge ran chen ne ba shwa de ran. De le mun sem tu ba ta kon tu sa ji pa ya ne. The never shave the land part, temperature doing somebody never thought that. Sangi Saman Namchi Tus Nangu Ring or answer, because Sangi Saman Shingi Sonsa, the day is longer.
So basically, what we're talking about is, you know, how to train our mind to cultivate great compassion and have the responsibility, sense of responsibility to benefit others and not harm others in any way, others meaning all sentient beings, and to cultivate bodhicitta and be like a bodhisattva. You know, bodhisattvas are great examples for us, and we would like to follow their footsteps if that's what we want to do, if we want to become bodhisattva. That's what I'm talking about here. The assumption is that we would like to be bodhisattva, and if nobody wants to be that, then it's a different story. Kishiba didn't say that, but then this doesn't apply. But if one wants to be a bodhisattva, which we think we all want to do, then what do bodhisattvas do? I mean, bodhisattvas have tremendous, you know, sense of patience and tolerance and really dedicated to benefit all other sentient beings. And here is a passage that is quoted from Guru Puja, which we call Lama Chöpa. And where it says, the Buddhist says, even if all the sentient beings in the entire universe, which is the three world systems, according to Buddhist explanation, turn, you know, out to be my enemies. All the sentient beings in the universe become my enemies for whatever reason. That they abuse me, that they beat me up, that they badmouth me, that they do all the, negative things, they pile up on me. May I remain unperturbed or disturbed, me too. And instead of harming them or retreating against them, may I bring benefits to them. That's how bodhisattvas function and think. You see, bodhisattvas has a tremendous sense of tolerance and really completely dedicated to others unconditionally. And we really would like to follow that. You know, that's why we are training ourselves to be able to do the same thing as bodhisattvas do or think the way bodhisattvas think. So basically the point I'm trying to make here is that, you know, we want to follow the footsteps of bodhisattvas, and so that we want to become bodhisattvas. And how do we become bodhisattvas? We need to cultivate bodhicitta, the altruistic mind of enlightenment. Once we have that state of mind genuinely present in us, day in and day out, then we ourselves have become a bodhisattva. And the bodhicitta, or becoming bodhisattva, is essential to become a Buddha. So without bodhicitta, one cannot be a bodhisattva. Without becoming a bodhisattva, one can never be a Buddha. Okay, so that's the whole theory we are laying out, and so we would like to make progress towards that. Everything takes a gradual step. We are graduating towards that at the moment, even if it means making a good aspiration. How nice it would be if I can have bodhicitta or be like a bodhisattva. Let that be it. So that's how we began our practice and journey, so that we, through our mind training practice, we are able to cultivate bodhicitta and become a bodhisattva and then advance to a complete enlightened state.
Mm-hmm.
you must not forget how I started off with and what are the key points I have laid out this morning.
That's what I think in this dream was. Maran solle, rava cham maze, tha ke chog res, ane susu sem ta digwa nyimbo zan reyo amare, sem ta digwa zan meb zoya ta, sanji gomba toya telta, iki zangma se kiwa ki res tang kiwi mas.
So at the very beginning, I try to make this point loud and clear, you know, that delusions reside in our mind. Our mind and delusions are very closely together, but delusions have not contaminated the very clear light nature of our mind. Therefore, it is very possible to purify our mind of delusions. We don't have to have any suspicion or doubt here. We can completely trust here. Okay, so that's a key point. I started off.
So that this shabala, I think, kar se urta che teba tan ji gyo mes jin ne intellectual shin ge he ke ba she he na yin mi le ki be he and the tradition mang bu che ji yan na so so rang ju li nyan le ma ji na le de sa ji ko ma thoi ya ma shi.
So I laid out how theoretically possible it is, you know, how possible theoretically it is to separate our mind and delusions from each other. But having said that, of course, that's not going to happen on its own. You know, that requires study and practice. While study or listening to teaching is very important to learn about practices, but simply learning, as Geshe-la used the word intellectual, becoming an intellectual scholar in Buddhism and never practicing or have no interest to do practice, that does not serve purpose. Okay, you may learn a lot about Buddhism, you can give an excellent lecture or a talk or a teaching, but if one never practices it, well, delusions and mind will stay together. You know, they never separate.
Kanshib tsikting ge tenda ma to ma shena ti susu rangjul jane ta nyane se to ti she ti ko nyane se se tsani ko kan sung ba ti she ta chen sung ba ti ta ga nang she ba ti le rangjul la le le kar ba ti le nyane se ga res.
So what I'm trying to say here is, yes, as important as it is to study Buddhism or learn about Buddhism through teaching, but whatever we learn, we need to put it into practice. What we learn is meant to be put into practice. And it could be little, because it all begins with little. And whatever little things we know, we learn, we try to put it into practice. So practice is key to spiritual development.
That he told me, Nghe kiwa tele, Yen le penpa drupat ma to, Nneba chan mishiya ngarang chongma loka ta, Nneba mishiya shene, Tegis, Sene kyangunis.
So related to the, you know, bodhicitta and great compassion, I said that all of us, you know, we should learn not to harm anybody or do anything harmful to others, but try to do what we could to help or benefit others.
Yes. That is it. That is the wrong thing around Somalo, around the Somalo repair the chair. And then if you be that, she gets the tensor, tensor tangents, Michigan and Sava, and then they're going to say any subjects on the jury, that shavings.
As I always do, that before I go back to the text, you know, to explain where we left off things, I try to, you know, share a few ideas or things which I think are very helpful and beneficial to all of us. And, you know, at times maybe these are the things that you already know. You have heard about these things many times, in which case this is a reminder. I may be not teaching you something new, but I'm definitely reminding you of what we need to do. But if you are very new to this kind of teaching, of course, then I'm giving you new information and new advices or teachings that you may like to put into practice.
Honest. When you truly that me tarang ko ki man do si tebi that ti ko ngum do si ma ti kalu na ba tele yi ki du du was that ti tara ran sam no tong ni ti sia be na ti tara ran ki in di ki zone ni do si.
And as I mentioned it last week, that in this particular session we just completed from Great Atisha's advice to Palama Changchubu, that we have gone through 46 statements from Great Atisha, and this morning again I refreshed my mind of these 46, and I realized that even if we just put those 46 statements into practice, it seems like that's quite enough in some sense as a practice in our life.
Yes. That only Joji, that Joji is them. Machine is the type of Joji since any Jagaka did the Sabbath night was since Jagan any that like the conversations of a baby Jesu only that Nalinda and they come like Shellas and that monastic that Chimbuchi Tachoji need those in that Tachoji need.
I think there are some new students there, so Geshe-la would like to just take a moment to introduce Great Atisha that we are talking about so much here, because if you're wondering like what is this, you know, who is this Atisha we're hearing so much. Great Atisha is one of great Indian Buddhist scholar practitioners, the realized scholars of the 11th century, and so this is like much later, Shakyamuni Buddha, who is the founding teacher of Buddha Dharma or Buddhism. And so during Atisha's time in the 11th century, there were two great monastic universities in India. One is called the Nalanda Monastic University, from where Atisha came from, and the other is called the Vikramshila Monastic University.
Then Sunsa, that Joji Pande Atisha, the Nalanda, that Kepachamuchi, that race.
And Great Atisha, whose complete name is called Dipankar Shrijan Atisha, he was, if not the top realized scholar, he was definitely one of the greatest, realized scholars of Nalanda Monastic University, India. So in the 11th century, just to cut short the whole history, that he was invited by a Tibetan king of the Western Tibet to Tibet.
Then call that you said such a common bond in any pen and curtain you know your is.
And of course, Atisha did not stay in one place of Tibet. You know, he traveled around different parts of Tibet, and wherever he went, he gave different teachings.
Yes.
So now what we are going to see is this is another new set of, if you will, instruction advice Atisha gives to another great Tibetan master in a place called Thak Yerba, which is quite close to Lhasa. And those of you who have been to Lhasa, maybe perhaps you might have visited this holy place called Thak Yerba. At that place, another great Tibetan teacher requested Atisha for some instruction or advice.
Any call and those in my dumbass, call man those in the flagging numbers.
So, I mean, maybe this Tibetan practitioner by the name of Rokerba Yishe Barwa. Rokerba is his family name. In the Tibetan tradition, the family name comes first, not at the end of the name, just a footnote. So he's called Rokerba Yishe Bar, and he's a monastic practitioner or a monk practitioner. And I don't know whether he really requested for instruction or not. Maybe it's the time. Adisha saw that this is the right time to give him instruction. Anyway, so this is Adisha's instruction to Rokerba Yishe Barwa at Tang Yerba.
That Toma de Kim Bawala, Dampa, that's Ribuji. Toma de Dandusan, Gumde Dema, Gumde De, Pama, Dumala, Shatse Losen, Kongane, Toji Pande Adi, Toma the Koran Ma, Dangan Nambi, Gum Toma, and a Digitumala and Lucene, Shatse number is.
So Aditya begins his advice instruction here with a salutation to Bhagavati Arayatara. In other words, Aditya said, I bow down to completely enlightened female Buddha Arayatara.
That gives you drama to conquer, Anita. That you don't flood. You don't flood somewhere.
Arayatara was considered as one of the principal meditational deities or Yidam by great Adisha.
Any you think that Rick some of the dim in the dance that then you put that then you put the dim in the dance and they say at young lady Tava young lady with them, maybe young lady, Oma Tosminati, come in this yet and those in the Imberta in Jagaki Banga with Sigurd in and then around to tell a tea taller, then they say at the in Hembra, Kansita, in the Dini Pachet, they gave a jump in the jump center. The Koran so with Jawaka, Bagam is here to the man, so they took that you buy in it and that you which have your manners.
So here, the Tibetan term Chomden there, as that of Chom, that is a Tibetan translation of a Sanskrit term called Bhagavan, and in this case, it has to be Bhagavati because it's the female, deity. Anyway, Kishore would like to explain the meaning of the Tibetan translation of Bhagavan or Bhagavati. So the Tibetan, translation, if you look at that, it says Chom. Chom means to destroy, literally. So this gives a sense of how someone who has destroyed completely the two mental obscurations, obscuration to liberation and obscuration to omniscient state, that's Chom. Then means to possess, to be endowed with. So endowed with what? Endowed with all, remarkable qualities, in other words, all the realizations of an enlightened being. So Chom then. So Bhagavan, it may be used in some other religions, or somebody Hindu they do in a footnote, but it may have a different meaning. In a Buddhist sense here, the Bhagavan, Chomden, means that one who has completely destroyed the two types of mental obscuration and one who is endowed with all the realizations, the remarkable qualities that's there to be attained. And then the Tibetan translator, in order to kind of differentiate the meaning of Bhagavan or the Chomden from, whatever the original meaning of Bhagavan in Indian literature, added another word called there. There means to go beyond, transcendental. So when we talk about Bhagavan here, we are not talking about someone who is not transcendental. That means one who has gone beyond the two types of mental obscuration and gone beyond in the sense of who has actualized everything that is there to be actualized. So Arayatara is such a person, enlightened being.
Yes. That pamasi, papasi, that is Kansa Karasheta. Morile Pama Singh Duat. Kakwas is any 가리 파스야 되더리다. 능이 거의 내리 파네. 아니 아 타베 감살 파든 파스 야다 그 파스 진짜 그래서 그렇다. 엘리베킹이 생도 컨지 같이.
나.
한테 내기 시험에 들들 파 파마스다. 소시 내 소시 내리 소시 소시 시위 내리야 파빈 파마스 된다.
So, pragma, arya, is a Sanskrit word, and Tibetan translation is means pragma. Pragma has a sense of transcendental, one who has gone, beyond. And transcendental in what sense? It means, you know, one who has transcended ordinary level of existence, one who is out of samsara, if you will. That is what we call transcendental.
Mm-hmm. The high-end jumping toshidri.
So the word park literally has a sense of, you know, high jump. You know, you kind of, you're not at a lower position, you just jump high to a higher state of existence. That is kind of a very ordinary literal sense. But here it means transcendental. You have transcended ordinary existence.
The Zambian Olympic, then we call concerned English. Tang and Danish at the chef, then they miss physical to share your mask. And the Danish showers.
So, you know, Kishala is kind of chuckling over this, you know, how when you watch the Olympic Games, all these athletic competitions, you know, who are jumping on the ropes or, you know, doing a high jump or whatever other kind of jumps, you know, and twists and turns they do. But amazing how they have trained themselves physically to be able to do, like, amazing things. But here, of course, we are not talking about doing any physical athleticism here. But we are talking more in sort of mental athletic, if you will, that we want to train our mind so that we can mentally and athletically, in that sense, you know, transcend ordinary levels. So if we want to do a competition, you know, we probably don't go to the Olympics for physical athletic competitions, but we are here in the game of mental competitions.
啊，这么了，下次是要在等到某某节日，这下次你就跟下次吧，我们是一直跟下次吧，那等你忙不了，但是你现在是好过不习惯，等你也不接个名字。
And it's a chaksal, which literally translates as prostration, or I just said salutation. Prostration can be of different kinds. There's a physical prostration, verbal prostration, mental prostration. I just want to lay out. I don't want to take time to explain them again here today.
他第一件事呢，空格，安尼一直专门的下棋，一旦个拉松是空的下棋，但那么当把那的下棋呢，是，第一件事呢，空格的，那么，嗯，我就去那么等着下棋那么的是。
And then next, Adisha prostrated to all his sublime or holy gurus or masters. Of course, he had his lineage gurus as well as his direct gurus. And he says, Lama Tamadam Chatsalo, I bow down to all my holy masters or gurus. You may have heard about the term Lama, and you might have been using it a lot, but do you know what it really means? Well, Lama has a very profound sense that it's not easy to be a Lama. And so that's why in the Buddhist, Tibetan Buddhist literature, there's a whole, explanations about, what are the qualifications that one has to have to be a Lama, qualified Lama, and so on. So that means that requires study and investigation to find out whether someone is a qualified Lama or not. Including myself, so you could, investigate me as well.
That carries in that carries in a Bangbei Yunting, the Togbei Yunting, Lasse Tobori, Bangbei, Bangdoji, Yunting, Toba the Dengit, and the Lama, the Nabatu Segunda.
So in a very nutshell, Lama or Guru, which is translation of the Sanskrit word Guru, Lama. Lama has a sense of, you know, being high on a like a high level. Lama means that you know, there's nothing above that. That's the highest point. So high in what sense? In terms of realization of qualities. So basically, we can break the realizations in two types. You know, the quality of realization that you gain from having abandoned all the things that need to be abandoned, and then quality of realization that's something that you need to accomplish. And so in the, you know, in a technical sense, we talk about you know, qualities of abandonment and actualization. So Lama is someone who is high up there, you know, in terms of both qualities. So when we think in terms of a label or naming, you know, there are different kinds of things. You know, we can talk about a name in a sense of, you know, that means it's just an imputed label, or that it really means what it means, you know, it's supposed to mean, naming,
an actual name.
So naming or a real name means that, you know, something that we label something or somebody, and that the name must fit, or that thing must fit the descriptions of the name or the label. That means it really means what it's supposed to mean, and that thing or that person really has, I mean, you know, fulfills that name, if you will. That's called naming, real name or actual name.
So then, that make me nyamasyan that dawasyan that lindo watan so naming mares, coming is.
For example, in the Tibetans, you know, there are people with the names called Nyima, means sun, and Dawa means moon. While these are what are called imputed names, because they are not sun and moon. They are not the solar, you know, systems. And of course, there are other names, like, you know, how somebody is called Sangye in Tibetan, but he or she is not a Buddha necessarily. It's just an imputed label or a name. Or somebody is called Kando, which means Dakini, but that's just a label. You know, doesn't necessarily mean that he or she is a Dakini. Now, when we call Shakyamuni Buddha, now that is a real name, because that's who he is.
So I'm just
giving this kind of a sort of widen your information perspectives on this, you know, other things which often we don't talk about. Of course, I mean, nothing in the text says that I need to explain these things to you, you know, but I thought this may be interesting and also useful. Atisha addresses Virgulpa Yishe Baba as Rikipu, O Noble Son. Of course, he is not Atisha's son, you know, but in more of a sort of a spiritual son, in a sense of, like, you know, a spiritual lineage. And also calling him a noble son, son of a noble family, meaning that family in a spiritual sense, this is also a kind of a word of endearment, you know, how, like, you know, when we, you know, feel so close to someone, then we use different, we use different labels and the words, or the, you know, to call them, to address them. So this is one of those things here. And Adisha tells him, "Oh, son of noble son, I'm going to, you know, tell you some things, and you really should think about the meaning of these words."
Soya karşısında şir nas, şeytanı çekine hingmi tüce min nams. Şeytanı çekine hingmi tüce. Ati hingma seyatele maransı da hingmi tüce senkin hingma çakırın. Hingma nga seyir ta. Ali dinun senkin hingmi senkin şey. Hingmi tüce. Tüce. Çene yün tüms. Ani hingmi tüce senkin zogu çete. Gira tüntüle yürüm bu mağrıs kanama. Ta Hiji number mangwes. So he goyaze, he goyaze nandran de ta pe changi mangba de ta kikita mangbo reis ka namar.
So then Adisha, you know, goes on to tell him, in general, at this degenerated time, Nyingme Tu, in the Buddhism, we talk about five types of degeneration, or sometimes we use the five dregs, Nyingma. So degenerated time is one. He says, so during this degenerated time, the lifespan of human beings is short, whereas the things to learn about, we call object of knowledge, are just innumerable.
Honest. That did to no German, so say Kayakusko, Ningma say, Ningma, Ningma say, Ningma, Nimote, Kosiama, Ningma say, and France, Maranzo, Chuluk, and Ningma say, today Maradas.
So when you hear the word Ningma here, you know, that might sound like Ningma to your ears. They're totally different spellings and different words, you know. So we're not talking about the Nyingma tradition of Tibetan Buddhism here. We are talking about Nyingma as in the sense of degeneration, degenerated time.
Oh, yes. And so that the Tsekunturis, Samalumit, Samalu Tsekunturis, Hiji Nandra Mangburis, Hiji Nandra Tangi Malamadajuris,
So Adisha is kind of telling him in a general sense, you know, how during this degenerate time, human life is short, but there are too many things to learn. The objects of knowledge are innumerable. Too many things to learn, but the life is short.
Oh, yeah. Then the sonsa, and the rang the tsechans, the cups, konga, the go in himbala kanangu, the yidan, tang rang the kogure. Rang the tsechans, get some tuber, never mepes.
And relatedly, not only life is short, but the there is so much uncertainty in our life. We don't know how long our life is going to be. You see, there's so much uncertainty with that.
Today, so much, you're doing jokwan joko, rang dupe, tangal, langwa last, da.
So then Adisha says that, you know, so therefore, you know, you should quickly pursue what you really want to accomplish. Of course, I mean, Adisha was at the time speaking to Vyogaba Yishe Baba, but what he really tells here is very applicable to ourselves. So we should not think like that, oh, this is what Adisha is telling him, as if, that has no relevance to us. We should think this is what really applies to us, that in general, during the degenerate era, human life is short, but there are too many things to learn, and also human life, you know, we don't know how long this life is going to last. So therefore, for all those reasons, you know, we should really quickly pursue what we really want to accomplish.
Rang deba tang de lang balang deba chi sone de rang deba tang de lang chi kar de sone chong ji ya ta ngu zo ya ta de ke da chi mo yu de ma res
So when it says that, so therefore, I mean, you should pursue what you really want to accomplish. Of course, Adisha is not talking about, doing some big business or making a lot of money or becoming very famous and all that.
Oh yeah, that career is na. Meba tang de lang is career is na lang de. Sanjeje te ando sanjeje kumbar doye te tar te res. So that the ani tang de lang meba chiki se de te chamba shuk tapo shekus kano.
So what it really means is that, you know, to pursue what you really want to accomplish, meaning that is the complete enlightenment for the benefit of all sentient beings. So that's what you should pursue as quickly as possible. Life is short, too many things to learn about. There is uncertainty with the time of time of death, and so therefore one should pursue quickly the complete enlightened state for the benefit of all sentient beings.
Hmm. Oh, that. 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 That.
I think this is a great advice, you know, to all of us, and we need to, you know, think about it.
Hmm.
Because we see here, you know, really Atisha is telling us about the impermanence of our life.
And
he talks about how we need to really work to benefit others.
And
he also, you know, highlights the need to fulfill the purpose of both self and others in an ultimate
sense. That
And then Adisha says, as I told you, that Vyogurba Yishibarba was a monk practitioner. So here Adisha says, do not call yourself to be a monk. Or claim that I'm a monk. When you you pursue the worldly livelihoods and be concerned and worried about like any other lay person, and then still call yourself a monk. So here, I mean, the contrast is made between, you know, a lay practitioner, basically the way Tibetan, what Chimba means is a sense of a lay who is not monastic, and more also a sense of like, you know, you are married, you know, family with. So of course, when you have a family of your own, there are so many things you need to do, you know. Life is busy, so many things to do for the family and yourself. And so as a monk who is pursuing spiritual goal, it really worries about and become busy like any ordinary married person with a family, and worrying about, you know, livelihoods and all other zillions of things, then it's a distraction. That's not right. Of course, you know, this you know, statement should not be read as to mean that, okay, now if I'm a layperson, then I can do all that. Atisha is not controlling that. He's not saying like, oh, if you're a layperson, you can be busy like anything and worry about your family, everything else, and be busy and get caught up with all that worldly activities and then never think about practice or dharma. Of course, even as lay people in a spiritual sense need to renounce
renounce sickly existence.
So whether one is lay or a monastic, doesn't matter. If we are seeking liberation or enlightenment, we need to develop aversion to samsaric
existence.
So we must not misunderstand renunciation or nyenjung or developing aversion to you know, samsara. It doesn't mean that if you have a lot of stuff, you need to get rid of them, or then you have to, you know, destroy everything, or like, you know, break up your family or something. We're not talking about that. What we really, renunciation means, in essence, is not to get attached to, you know, resources and, you know, samsara.
像是英国是法国人的，商榷商榷的背景明白，商榷背景通过各条的，差的差的思考要嘛东西。
Well, I mean, I think many of the older students may recall this example I gave, some time ago. Things we use in our life. Yes, we recognize we need to use them for survival or whatever the case may be, but do not get attached to them. And how is that possible? If you say, I give this example, like we need to go to the restroom, right? And we go to the restroom and then we use it, but nobody gets attached to the restroom, you know. You flush it down, you know. So that's what we're talking about. And I really mean it, like, you know, whenever I talk here, I told you that I, as much as I'm telling you, you know, what we all should do, I include myself in it. So I'm in the audience. I'm not telling you to do something that I don't need to do. We all must take it seriously that we don't practice by mouth. You know, there are a lot of people who practice by mouth. It is like, you know, mouth is the thing that, you know, talk about Dharma, you know, it's like the mouth does the job of practice. That is not good. You see, practice is something we cultivate in our mind. Mind needs to be engaged in practice, not just mouthing Dharma. And so we will stop there today, and as in a very traditional way, Kishala, you know, very poetically concluded it, as we usually the great lamas do, which is that whatever I have spoken about today, you know, with please, if you want to sort of be kind to me, put it into practice in whatever way you can.
I
have a prayer request for Jesse Greeder, who I think passed away today, you know, due to cancer.
So, based
upon that request for Jesse, and of course there are, you know, many you know, humans and other beings, you know, pass away at the same time or other times. So, and most of the people who die usually, you know, really, how should I say, they die in a very difficult situations. So they don't have much of a confidence in the state that they will have a good rebirth. So it is a very difficult situation, and we think about all of them, and we send our thoughts and prayers for them, that may they be able to regain a precious human life, and then come under the care and guidance of qualified spiritual masters, and then through the concerted efforts, may they be able to progress on paths to complete enlightened state.
Chadon Golis,
Whatever merit we have accumulated together this morning, from my side giving you the teaching and from your side receiving the teaching, may our merit contribute to the flourishing of Dharma throughout the universe. May His Holiness the Dalai Lama and all other holy masters live long and be successful in fulfilling their visions, benefiting sentient beings. May spiritual communities throughout the world and spiritual practitioners from all traditions remain healthy, harmonious, and be successful in fulfilling their spiritual aspirations. May this and other world environments be free of all kinds of unwanted pains and problems, and may beings find peace, happiness, prosperity, and spirituality. Last but not least, we dedicate our collective merit, positive energy for all kind mother sentient beings to be free from the fears and dangers of two types of mental obscuration, and may we all reach complete enlightened state quickly.
An announcement about His Holiness' visit tickets. I have with me today, out of registration, just four teachers.